We're back at this Channel 9 stage here at TechEd in New Orleans, 2013.
Fantastic.
And I am blessed with another Commonwealth individual. Jeez, I had Ben Armstrong earlier today. For those of you that were alive on the stream earlier on, you're trying to figure out what kind of accent he had. He has a Northern Australian accent to the west side in Brisbane. Not Brisbane, as I was corrected. It's Brisbane. And where do you hail from, my friend?
I hail from a little place called Phillip Island, actually.
Phillip Island?
Yes, which is in Victoria, which is down sort of the south east. And that's where they do the Grand Prix, so the Formula One Grand Prix, nice. If anyone knows about that.
And so who are you, by the way?
Me? everyone calls me Macca. My name's Andrew McMurray, but being an Australian, we can't possibly use our own names. We all have nicknames. So okay. I'm Macca, and I'm an IT pro evangelist. And I look after Windows infrastructure, so specifically helping our customers understand why they should deploy Windows and System Center and Windows Server.
Nice. Now, I asked you on the stage purely for self-promotion because we are both doing a day-long track, as it were, here at TechEd, specifically on upgrading. So we're going to be talking about Server 2012 upgrades and how to get there from different versions to the optimal state. And those are not going to be broadcast here at Taste of TechEd, but they will be broadcast on demand after the fact. So stay tuned if you are interested about that. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be opening up the floor for questions right now to go for anything that you might have with regards to upgrading your infrastructure.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I've got to ask you, this is a pretty simple kind of generic blanket question. Are you an in-place man? Are you an upgrade man? A migration man?
Well,
in-place or migration? Where does your hat fall?
Well, personally, I've always been a migration man. Always been a migration man. I'm scared of in-place upgrades.
Yeah.
If something goes wrong, you're in a whole world of hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But as I sort of move forward into this current age, I'm starting to potentially change that because, you know, so much virtualization out there now.
Yeah.
The ability for us to effectively be able to roll back to where we were if something goes wrong means that doing an upgrade now becomes, you know, really much more of a possibility.
Okay. I also fall under the migration side of things as well, as opposed to an in-place. But I was recently having a discussion with the file server team, and I was having a discussion with Jose Beretta about file servers and what you should be doing to them, in-place upgrades or doing a migration of stuff. And he was saying, you know, it really comes down to your comfort level.
Mm.
The in-place upgrade is actually the most tested scenario out there during our break-fix tests of OS deployments, this sort of stuff. And so, potentially, you might be a candidate to be able to be used as a in-place upgrade. So,
oh, absolutely.
We'll actually be debating this at different stages, at different points.
I think, too, if you're looking at physical servers and potentially upgrading physical servers, why not look at actually doing a physical to virtual migration
and
then doing an in-place upgrade there? That way, at least you've got a rollback capability fairly easy.
That's true. And normally, again, if you're looking at doing a migration, it's also the great opportunity to get rid of that old hardware that's end of life. You know, we all had those servers in the back that basically you always were nervous whenever the cleaning staff went close to them inside the server room, or, you know, if you had to do a reboot on them, you're terrified for security patches because you never knew if the damn thing would come back up again.
Absolutely. And that old anecdote of, you know, the cleaner unplugged the server in order to put the vacuum cleaner in. That actually happened at a place I worked at. And this was a long time ago. I worked at a medical research institute, and our main servers were sitting in a cupboard, and literally they would get unplugged every night in order to do the vacuuming. Pretty scary stuff.
And you wonder why you had those, 8009 event log entries or something like that?
Yeah, that's
it. That was there? definitely. So if you're on the Channel 9 site right now watching, so I'm hoping someone's out there watching, if you have any questions about Windows Server infrastructure upgrades, by all means, fill out the form, hit submit, and someone will be able to promote them so I can see them on the screen as I look over at my producer to look at any questions that might have come up or anything like that. So we will have you covered when they come up. Now, you and I have been cooperatively developing this content for the upgrade stuff. What would you say would be the most interesting scenario that you believe will be answered based on feedback from your customers and people you've talked with that they're the most interested in?
Oh, definitely virtual domain controllers, the thing that I get asked about a lot. And I think one of the most exciting aspects of that is the capability for us to do DC cloning now in a way, especially through VMgen ID, in a way that's absolutely safe.
Right.
The old USN bubble problem that we used to have with domain controllers is now gone when you're dealing with a hypervisor that's VMgen aware. And being able now to clone DCs gives me the ability to push out large numbers of DCs in a very fast space of time simply by cloning an original domain controller.
Right.
And I've seen a lot of excitement about that, especially down in Australia where we... Where we traditionally wanted to go down the path of virtualization for domain controllers. A lot of our major customers have wanted to do that, but of course haven't been able to because of those issues with USN bubbles.
Now, you don't think that there's a level of apprehension with having to switch? I mean, we've been preaching the fact that you should not be virtualizing your domain controllers for the longest time, and then we brought in that capability to now do it. People are still not hesitant, or are they like jumping in with both feet, dude?
Not that I've seen. I've seen quite an interest in jumping in at that because we're now at a point where we can specifically state that we support, you know, that virtualized domain controller, that clone domain controller because of the VM Gen ID thing, mm-hmm. and I think that people are prepared to take that step now.
And I can see our very first question is up on the board from Ed, and it's actually talking about a cluster environment, which is always fun when you start talking about upgrading clusters. Can I upgrade on a 2008 R2 Hyper-V cluster to 2012? If not, can I break the cluster, upgrade one node to 2012, migrate the VMs, and then upgrade to the second host? Very long, drawn-out question.
Well, we have a number of videos around that exact topic, if I remember correctly, on migrating a 2008 R2 cluster to 2012. I think that was done on the Edge show recently.
Yeah. I was about to say my colleague Simon Perriman actually did a recent episode on the Edge show talking about it, and a little anecdote of history. He was actually on the cluster team, and that was one of the things that he was managing during the initial phases of 2008 R2 and 2012 development before he came over to the evangelism side, specifically talking about it. So it is a wizard-based process you have to go through.
Absolutely.
It is not a, I'm going to say, it's not as easy as popping the disk in and saying click, 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 next, done.
No.
There is more to it, but it does give you reports before and after, tells you how to do it, and it will actually go through that process. But there will be some negotiated downtime to be able to do that migration. It's not as seamless. Now, with 2012 R2,
All yours, man. All right. Well, in 2012 R2, one of the exciting things will be that we will actually give you the ability to live migrate the VMs from a 2012 RTM Hyper-V cluster through to a 2012 R2 Hyper-V cluster.
Right.
So that will be very exciting.
And I will give one caveat to that, though. It is a one-way migration.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the Roach Motel. You can go in, but once you're there, you're there. You can't get back out
Absolutely.
Again.
Absolutely.
So you're there. Let me take a look. We have one here from Glenn Berry. What are some of the top reasons to upgrade from 2012 to Windows Server 2012 R2 from a performance and scalability perspective? Now, I've been chained to my desk at the Channel 9 stage for the last couple of days. It's a nice way of saying that I'm working. You've been able to, you know, take in some of those sessions. And did you see any specific ones in 2012 R2 that you would think would be... a big push to say, go ahead and accelerate that move.
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably the most exciting thing that I've seen so far from the performance side of the fence is in our ability now through storage spaces to do storage tiering in Server 2012 R2. So the idea is that we can create a storage space using a mixture of spindle-based disks and SSD-based disks and effectively tier those within the virtual disk so that any hot data gets moved to the SSDs while colder data stays on the spindle-based disk. So that is an incredible performance improvement.
And quite literally, we saw the demo of that on the keynote if you wanted to take a look at that. I think they also showed it again in a bit more detail in the foundation session for transforming your data center. And Jose has actually got a whole session on that and more. That's there. And it literally is as simple as with the server manager interface, going ahead and selecting the drives, and then it detects that there are different performance, because there's actually metadata property about the drive for the type of drive it is, for how fast
absolutely.
It is. And basically when it detects that it's an SSD, it will automatically carve that up and give you the option in the wizard. If it detects they're all the same, then it just leaves it alone and assumes you make it a simple space.
It's actually stupidly simple, to the point where it is so easy to do that you look at it and think this can't possibly work, because it is so easy to do. Those of us that have been working in enterprise class storage for a while are probably familiar with the amount of work you actually have to do with a device to get that ready.
And,
this stuff is just phenomenal. Probably the other thing that I was really interested to see, and it's kind of from a performance point as well, is the ability for us now to, on a per VM basis, to limit the amount of IOPS that we give to an individual VM storage, which can be really good in a hosted provider scenario,
okay,
where you have a bunch of VMs at a hoster. Perhaps you're going to be running a high-scale database workload on one of those, and of course the IOPS go through the roof, and it starts affecting the rest of that service provider's customer's VM estate. We can now say on a per VM basis, well, let's just limit the amount of IOPS we give to that machine. So granted that workload is going to take a little longer to finish, yeah, but you're not killing all the other customers and that are sharing that space.
And I believe it's actually a two-way street. It's not just a limit, so the maximum, but it's actually maintain a minimum and also allow up to a maximum. So it is both ways.
Correct.
So you guarantee the availability as well as preventing the noisy neighbor syndrome that happens to be there. Mine, I think, would have been along the lines of some of the cool stuff that we're doing on the just in the hypervisor space.
Yep.
I know that one thing I didn't think it was a big deal, but actually makes a lot of sense, is the ability to have console access without network access to the VM if you need to for troubleshooting purposes in a hosting environment, and also the ability to do VM activation.
Yes.
So basically you activate the data center license on the host system, and then it is able to go in and act as an activation process for all of the guests, where it does not need to go off and talk to somebody else. That hugely simplifies large environments to running KMS servers.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely also from the hosting perspective, that VM activation is a massive benefit.
Can you tell that we're a bunch of virtualization geeks up here or what? Take a look at this. PS user is asking us over here, with virtual DCs now supported with 2012 and also R2, do you still recommend a portion of the DCs to be physical, or is it within practice to use all virtual domain controllers? What's your thought on this? Because this is more of a guidance thing from a consulting side of thing. What would you say? Are you old school?
I would say that given the capabilities we now have with VM GenID and the fact that we don't have to worry too much about rollback issues, there is no reason why you couldn't go a completely VM DC estate, in my opinion. I don't believe that it will happen immediately. I think that there'll still be plenty of customers out there that will want that feel-good security of at least one physical DC. But in terms of purely a supportable question, we could go all VMs.
Oh, absolutely. I would say wholeheartedly jump in both feet, go all
definitely.
Virtual. Provided you ensure you have an external time source you're talking to. That's the biggest thing, right?
Yep, definitely.
That you don't have any time drift that's going on. Make sure you have an external time source that your primary domain controller, FISMO role owner, is pointing to reliable time
external
source.
External NTP server.
That's the most important.
Absolutely.
But there are customers out there that still have schema review boards in place for any kind of schema changes, so they're probably going to be a bit more risk adverse, if you will.
Yeah, definitely.
That are out there for going that whole virtualized DCs. Virtualized DCs are manually built, virtual DC supported, thus avoiding the cloning issues mentioned. Tim Kirsten's question. Do you understand that one, what he's talking about there?
I'm not quite aware of the cloning issues.
Oh, wait. Are manually built virtual domain controllers supported?
Well, yes, they
are. So without cloning. So absolutely,
Yeah. I mean, hand-build a virtual DC, you're all in. No problem.
Our demo environments, we create them from scratch.
Oh, yeah.
They're from out of the box, a domain controller that's virtualized.
Yeah, in our demo environment, we have three manually built virtual DCs, and we're going to do some cloning ones as
well. No physicals anywhere. No. Once again, make sure that you are doing this in the production environment, that you have an external time source that you can be pointing to. There we go. How about Anim is asking a question here. Mr. Khan, what should be the roadmap for customers still running Windows Server 2003? The first thing we have to say is the support features of 2003 and a supportability statement is that it is very near end of life. I believe it is 2015. Okay, I'm getting the note over there from the producer for the proper ones. Anyway, it's coming fast. How about that? It's already in extended support mode, as it is. So you're going to want to basically start to do the moves off of that as soon as possible. And there is specific guidance that we'll be talking about in our sessions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Both if you are currently on 2003 or if you're in 2008 for different pieces of your infrastructure, how you'd move the different pieces over. The biggest issue with 2003 environment is... I'm testing you right now.
Sorry.
What's the biggest issue if you're on 2003 environment right now for the operating system that's preventing you from going to the next level? I'm completely blanking you out. Yeah,
no, you've blanked me out. I'm sorry, man.
I got you. X86, baby.
Oh, sorry. 32-bit,
yep. 64-bit. Big issue.
Absolutely
big
right.
issue. And not to mention the fact, like I always like to say in my sessions, if you had a dog when 2003 came out, it would be dead by now.
I still have my head more in the DC clouds there. Sorry about that.
So the X86 issue, there's no direct upgrade path for being able to in-place upgrade, so you have to do a migration.
Yep, absolutely.
And there's guided documentation about how to get from 2003 X86 over to the X64 platform for all the different components, and we'll make sure we address that in our session.
Yep.
You'll be able to catch online.
From the domain controller perspective, you know, if you've got 2003 domain controllers still out there that are holding the FISMO roles, make sure you get those transferred.
Yeah.
Make sure that all of your replication is finished and that we're completely aware of the fact that those FISMOs are off 2003 before we start demoting
right.
any of those old 2003 domain controllers. That's a big thing.
Absolutely. Yes. Good point. Good point. It does take a little bit of time for your replication to converge.
It certainly does.
Especially in large environments. Oh, look at this, Carlos. Good question here from Carlos. I'm from the school of thought that the best solution is a clean state install in place of upgrades. They scare me because they carry forward the hidden malware, corrupt files, and other stuff like that. How do you address these issues with in-place upgrades?
Well, I think the first thing you want to do is make sure there's no malware on the machine. And you should really be doing that with an enterprise class 80 malware solution. So hopefully you've done that before you attempt to do anything of that sort. I understand why you would be worried about carrying forward corrupt files and so on and so forth. And I think that...
And you know, just to be clear, I'm also of that kind of thought. And you're also just now starting to move out of that kind of thought as well for upgrade process, right?
Yeah. Look, I think that a clean slate install absolutely will be fine. A migration path will be fine. But if you're looking at an in-place upgrade, you know, definitely consider the idea of physical to virtual migrating the box into a virtual world before you start doing anything. And that way, you've at least got the ability to roll it back very easily if something goes wrong.
Yeah.
You certainly would be very well served to be doing a lot of scanning of those files, so maybe doing some check disk activity and stuff like that before you go ahead.
Yeah.
But I would not necessarily be totally scared of the in-place upgrade scenario anymore. For instance, one of the things that we do in one of our sessions this week, well, we don't actually do it because it takes too long, but we do an in-place upgrade of one of our domain controllers from 2008 R2 through to Windows Server 2012. We're not going to do it live because the process takes upwards of half an hour. And
unless you want
there.
To watch a progress bar for
well,
20
well,
minutes,
I love
right?
a progress bar personally, man. I think it's fantastic, but not everybody else does. So we're gonna video that and sort of play it fastback. And spoiler alert there, sorry everybody. And it works just fine.
Yeah.
You know, and in the past, that would have been something that I would be deathly afraid of. But definitely make sure that the machine is clean before you go ahead and do anything. Consider a virtual, physical to virtual migration before you go ahead, and you should be okay.
I mean, I definitely would say this speaks to the whole process of the level of maturity and the development of the ways that we've been developing software for a long time. Mm. Things have gotten a lot better. And you know, I am also from the old school way of doing things, and it's, you know, habits are a hard thing to break.
Well, certainly,
and
yeah.
I'm used to doing migrations as opposed to in places, but I've been warming up to the idea of migrations more, of in place more, especially with the whole ability to go off and to go from physical to virtual first and have a backup plan if you need to. For me, it's a CYB, cover your butt.
Yeah,
right.
And I think it's a really, it's an interesting type scenario too that you'll see a lot of. For want of a better term, younger people in the industry that have been in the industry for not as long as we have, that have been working with software that's a long way down the development track where it is a lot safer to do this sort
yep.
of stuff these days. Now, you and I, you know, we may have done upgrades in the past, let's say in the NT351, NT4 days, it didn't go so well. And once you're burned once, you don't tend to want to put your hand back in the fire. So
right.
it is very, very hard to break that habit. But no, I agree.
Yep.
I think we're getting there.
I got a question from an unknown guy talking about virtualized domain controllers and a failover cluster. Is live migration supported? Greets. Nice to see you, unknown guy. I'll take that one there.
Okay.
It's the role of a domain controller is not designed to be a clustered supported role. Basically, you just simply run with the architecture of how domain controllers work. You simply have a second domain controller inside the same site. definition of a site is subnet and well-connected network, or inside other sites to be able to handle your failover. Be able to handle in case that main domain controller is not available. So it's got its own level of resiliency built into it. So again, if it is now a virtualized domain controller, you have no restrictions whatsoever for where it happens to sit, what hardware it sits on, and the ability to have complete and total live migration or shared nothing migration, mm-hmm. or storage migration of any kind. So basically three different types of migration is supported with that domain controller. Within the span of a TCP window, which means it's a live migration, it'll continue to go off and answer questions.
Absolutely.
And again, technically, if that one box was down for any point in time, a client is going to be smart enough that it's going to be able to go off and find DNS. Where's my domain controller? Go and talk to this guy here. He's inside my same site. Go off and ask him for a authentication process.
Yep.
He's going to not answer, and I'm going to go back to my DNS and say, where's the next guy? It's the closest one to be able to go to. So the nature of how the Active Directory system is architected already handles that side of thing. SBS 2011.
I'm out.
Wait, you're walking away from that one?
I'm out already.
Not going to talk about it? So this is a type of question that I get asked a lot from a lot of different people. And my answer always is along the same lines of it depends with how you're going to be approaching this. Because there's never a single answer for how to migrate from one particular integrated solution, like SBS 2011, 2010, 2007, whatever version happens to be, over to something else. What I will say is that obviously with the SBS environment, with a lot of the migration stuff that I've seen in the past, they've been swing migrations, or they've been some kind of, you know, bring up a parallel environment and then do a data migration over, because you're dealing with smaller numbers. In that side of thing, right? So generally speaking, you are going to want to look at being able to move from 2011. That's the current version for 2011 Essentials. That's what it's called. Or sorry, 2012 Essentials. Over to the next version, whatever the next version happens to be. And then get the functionality you're looking for to be able to do that migration. But there's nothing as far as an easy scenario to talk about. It's always a let's work on this kind of thing. Hey, we got another Canadian asking a question there. Steven from Halifax. Hey, how's it going, eh? Maybe you already covered, but what about Hyper-V 2008 R2 to 2012 R2 upgrades, non-cluster configuration, is shutting down all the VMs, upgrading the R1 server to the best approach or straightforward when it's released, of course. So basically going from an older version of Hyper-V to a newer version of Hyper-V. Non-cluster environment.
I don't think we have any guidance on the R2 question right now.
No, the R2 question.
A little bit too early for that.
Yeah, so, but to 2012.
Yes.
Simple matter of you're able to go in and to do an export-import.
Yep.
Of the machine very easily. There is no live migration between them. You have to do an export-import. And then you're going to want to be able to go in and update the integration components on that box.
Yeah, the integration components.
Once you're
important.
At 2012, there will be the ability to migrate stuff from 2012 to 2012 R2.
Correct.
And you'll be able to test that during the release preview. That's going to be coming out later in June. Mm-hmm. You guys like typing in very long questions for us to be able to. I'm trying to scan them quickly. It's coming here. With all the domain controllers virtual, but live migration only being possible with Hyper-V hosts that are members of the same domain, unless it's changed, wouldn't this still require a physical DC in the case of bringing up at least one of the first physical boxes first, or is live migration possible between standalone servers? Well, I can answer that part easily enough. Live migration, shared nothing live migration, or storage migration, all the migration aspects of anything to do with Hyper-V all require that they are part of the same security principles domain, which
correct.
Is the Active Directory domain. To be able to do it. It's not possible to do a live migration between member servers. And it has never once come up in any of my discussions with the product team that has changed with the next version, but we haven't fully disclosed or fully talked about it, I think, just yet. So that's the easy question to answer right there. Will you cover how to move a certificate authority to a newer OS in our session?
Afraid not.
That is a great question. Thank you very much, Martina.
That is definitely a good one for a webcast, I think.
Well, it's a good one for a webcast. I actually covered that from a previous version, 2003 to 2008 R2 process. And it is a matter of exporting the certificates, the templates that are being used, and everything else like that, bringing them into the new one, and then having the names, property assigned, stuff like that. All that still applies. There is nothing new added to the migration process if you're migrating a certificate CA. Because of time constraints, we're not including that in our sessions this week. But hey, if that's of interest, leave us a comment, let us know during the individual sessions, and we will ensure that we can put up a webcast on that just to see if it's changed at all.
Yep.
Another question. Can you move from a 2012 standard install to a 2012 data center install by changing the license?
Now, unless I'm very much mistaken, I have done that by changing product key. But I can't remember exactly.
I will say that this is strictly a licensing issue because there is absolutely no technical differences as far as capabilities between a standard and a data center with 2012.
Yep.
In 2008 or 2, we had differences between enterprise and standard and that sort of stuff with what you could do with cluster and that sort of thing. With 2012, it is the same capabilities on both those systems.
It's interesting you say that. You know, just one of the most fundamental ways in which you can really get to grips with the fact that the feature sets don't change between standard and data center is the fact that we don't differentiate between the two types of server from the logon screen anymore.
That's
now,
true.
When you get a logon screen on Server 2012, it just says Windows Server 2012 underneath, whereas if you were in 2008 R2, it actually specified the SKU of server that you were running. It's just little nuances like that that we've put into 2012. But yeah, licensing question, probably best for the licensing guys.
Nice. We have about 2 minutes left in case any last-minute questions come in. I'm going to ask you something completely off the wall. You're on Bourbon Street for the first time a couple nights ago, my
friend. Oh, my
goodness,
mate. Yeah.
I have photographic evidence of the fact that he was on Bourbon Street.
Yeah, can we not put that up on Twitter or anywhere?
It's like Las Vegas. It just stays here. It happens here.
Excellent.
What'd you think of it, man? Coming from Australia, first time in Nolans. Is there anything comparable down under?
Yeah, it's kind of like the Gold Coast. Speaking of the Gold Coast, if you want to come to Tech in Australia this year, basically you're just shifting Bourbon Street halfway across the world. That's really what it's about. Except we don't have those things. You don't have the beads. We don't have the beads down there. We got something else entirely.
Okay.
Yep.
So what are the dates of Tech Out Australia?
Dates of Tech Out Australia are the 2nd to the 6th of September, I do believe.
And the call for content just recently closed. You're going to be doing a draw?
No, it didn't. No,
close?
It is still open until the...
it's New Zealand that closed.
It's New Zealand that's closed. We're still open. We're open until I think it's the 15th of June.
Yeah.
So get your sessions in. Those of you watching from Australia, get your sessions in. We have lots and lots of submissions.
Oh, nice.
Really keen to see your best stuff out there, your deployment sessions, anything you want, put it through.
Well, you know, I happen to know a guy that might be able to accept our upgrade sessions to possibly go in down there. So I'll put a shameless plug in to say, hey, if you want to have upgrade, I'm your man. I can help out.
All right. I'll get on the side tonight and approve them, mate. Not a problem.
I'll see if I make the cut in the review process. With that, I think, you know what? Are we getting close to wrapping up? I think I got about 30-odd seconds left before we hand it off back to Taste of Tech Ed. Now, we're coming back into hacker tools you should be looking at. So very interesting session coming up right after this. It's going to be streamed live. Don't forget, all the sessions you're looking at right now at TechEd are available on demand within 24 to 48 hours of their completion. You're welcome to go off, take a look at the catalog, and pre-select the ones you want to go off, take a look at. Thanks a lot, Mecca.
Thank you, mate.
I appreciate it.
Great to be here, and I'm almost over the jet lag.
We're out of here.